I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to this week's Failed Critics podcast and the reaction to the 2017 Oscars ceremony. I'm Steve Norman. I'm joined by Andrew Brooker.
Evening, gents.
Paul Field.
Evening, fellas.
And Owen Hughes.
Hello. I've gone last this week. I don't normally go last.
Yes.
It's like Orson Welles, sir, doesn't it? You should be first or last. So that's fine with me.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So, in this podcast, we're going to take a look at those who have won the Oscars for the various categories in this 2017, as well as reviewing some new releases and other films in what we've been watching and having a quiz. Speaking of the quiz, straight into it.
I believe it's poised. Is it 2-2 at the moment?
It is, yes.
So whoever loses this is definitely watching something terrible.
Well, if I win this, Paul can choose what Owen has to watch for me.
Okay, because you've got a film ready, haven't you, Paul?
Oh, yeah.
Great.
Well, as it's Oscars, and they have been quite dry, I'm not going to lie, this week's quiz is on geezer movies.
Oh, no.
Fuck's sake.
So, let's crack on. Owen and Brooker, you're on a team. Mm-hmm. Steve, you're on your own. They're multiple choice for the most part. Which one of these is not a real film starring Dave Courtney? Girls, Gear and Motors, Gangsters, Gamblers and Geezers, Looters, Tooters and Sawn-Off Shooters. Which one of those is not a real film?
I like how before we started recording you said, if you know it, don't shout out.
Because... like we were ever going to know it. First one, I reckon.
Oh, okay, we'll go with the first one.
You sure?
Mm-hmm.
Right, I'm on your head, be it.
Steve, what do you reckon?
I think it's the last one is fake.
Looters, Tooters and Sawn-Off Shooters. Unfortunately, Steve, that is a real film. As is Gangsters, Gamblers and Geezers. The fake is Girls, Gear and Motors.
Fantastic.
How's that for a guess? I'm all right with that.
Brilliant. Is that the end of the quiz? Does that mean I've
no.
won?
No.
Oh, won.
Damn it.
I should have won that, really.
Which of these... is not, so which one of these is a fake, of IMDb listed characters that Dave Courtney has played? Dangerous Doug from Dartford, Lenny the Nonce, or the Tank Killer? Which one of those is a character that he hasn't played?
I don't think he would have played B.
He wouldn't have played the Nonce.
See, the Tank Killer could be a bit of a curveball because he is known for having a tank that he rolled out in Mob Handed.
That's it. Wasn't he the Tank Killer in Mob Handed?
But was he credited as that?
I don't fucking know.
He must have been. He had a name in Killer Bitch, but I don't think he had one in Mob Handed. Which one do you reckon then, Brooker?
Nonce. There's no way he plays someone called Nonce.
Lenny the Nonce.
And some dickhead calling himself Dangerous David from Dartford.
Dangerous Doug from Dartford.
That's what I said.
Is real. It was his character in a film called The Estate Film. And he was indeed the Tank Killer in Mob Handed. So you both get a point there for Lenny the Nonce.
It's not the name that, you know, instills the most terror in you, is it? Well, unless you're like a...
unless you're four.
Prepubescent boy, I guess, then you're probably terrified of Lenny the Nonce. But
right. I'd be terrified of Dave Courtney if I was...
Top Slice and Underground Nights co-host James Mullinger has appeared in two geezer movies. Which one of these wasn't he in? Vendetta, The Governors, or Assassin?
I know this one, so Steve, you may go first.
A.
Vendetta.
Mm.
Okay. Owen?
The Governors.
Correct. He was not in The Governors.
Mm-hmm.
You're running away with this one. Right, more Dave Courtney. Which of these is not a real Dave Courtney film? Thugs, Mugs and Dogs. Triads, Yardies and Onion Bargies. Lock, Cock and Two Smoking Banjos.
The last one, I reckon. But only because it sounds like a porno.
Yeah, I'll go with that. I wouldn't know where else to go. Yeah, well, let's go.
Steve?
Was it Bent Cocks and Smoking Banjos?
Yeah, I'm going to go with that one as well.
You're both correct. It is fake. There is a film called Thugs, Mugs and Dogs, which is, I think it's a gambling film set around a dog track in Rotherham. Triads, Yardies and Onion Bargies is, of course, real. But Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Banjos...
is, of course, real?
You would have heard of that. But there is a real film called Lock, Cock and Two Smoking Bimbos, which he is in.
That's got to be a porno.
Right.
It was listed on IMDb, so I'm not sure.
Plenty of porn on IMDb.
Okay, Tamer Hassan. He's appeared in plenty of Geezer movies, but he's also rocked up in two comic book movies. But which one of these did he not appear in? Kick-Ass, Batman Begins, or Tank Girl?
Oh, I think I know this one as well.
Do you want to go first, Steve?
I think it's definitely in Batman Begins. I think it's Tank Girl.
See, now I think he's the bouncer guy in Kick-Ass, the bodyguard, and... I think he's definitely in Batman Begins as well, because that's British. I'm pretty sure Tank Girl is the one he's not in.
Both correct, point each.
Yes.
Right, Craig Fairbrass. Better known, again, for his geezer work.
Mm-hmm.
But he appeared in which film with Sylvester Stallone? Was it Cliffhanger, Over the Top, or The Expendables? Owen?
I know this one.
Booker knows it, so Steve can go first again.
Oh, go on then, Steve.
B.
Over the Top. Go on, Brooker.
Okay. Pretty sure he was in Cliffhanger.
He was in Cliffhanger. Scarily, you actually got all of yours right, I think, Owen.
Brilliant.
So this last question is a slightly extended one. It is fairly irrelevant now, but I'll give it to you anyway.
Mm-hmm.
All British gangster films, pretty much, either have the word hooligan, Essex, or craze in the title.
Mm-hmm.
There are 25 films which either have the word hooligan, Essex or craze that you can buy on Amazon, excluding documentaries, David Essex's greatest hits and the only Essex. So you can bid yourselves up against each other. How many of those 25 films do you think you could name? Owen?
Oh my God.
Not a clue.
No. Five.
Steve?
I'm going to have to say six.
Yeah.
Owen?
Seven. No, I'm going to make you name eight. No, I'm going to make you name seven.
Right, go on, Owen. Name seven films then.
You're going to help me out as well, Brooker, yeah?
I will try.
Okay. Hooligan is a film.
That is correct.
Does Green Street Hooligans count?
Correct.
Okay, so that's two. Essex Boys?
Correct.
Is there an Essex Boys 2?
No.
The Craze. The Craze?
The Craze, yep.
If this was the National Lottery show with Nick Knowles, as soon as they got one wrong, that would have been it.
It's just a bit of fun.
It's only fun if you play it by the rules.
Essex Gangsters?
No.
The Essex Craze
Steve,
Hooligans.
Do you want to take over here? They got four.
Something to do with a white collar hooligan.
Yep.
Oh yeah.
That'll do. Yeah. Got any more?
Essex Retribution. I think was one, wasn't it?
No. Go on.
No.
Keep up, Steve.
No, I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know.
Well, I could have had Hooligan, Dangerous Mind of a Hooligan, Green Street Hooligan, Hooligan Factory, Hooligan Legacy, Hooligan Wars, Hooligan Murders, Hooligans at War, I Am Hooligan, The Hooligan Club, Undercover Hooligan, White Collar Hooligan, White Collar Hooligan 2, White Collar Hooligan 3, Essex Boys, Essex Vendetta, Essex Boys Retribution, Essex Heist, Essex Boys Law of Survival, The Fall of the Essex Boys, This is Essex, Rise of the Craze, Fall of the Craze and Legend of the Craze.
Dear Lord, they all sound like film gold.
How many of those has got Jonathan Sothcott as producer?
All of them.
Lost the quiz.
I am rubbing my hands with glee at the moment. What is he going to watch, Paul?
Hold on. Who was it that said I was going to be useless at this quiz?
I'm going to struggle with this one. Steve.
It was your teammate, Brooker.
Steve, you will be receiving in the post this week a wonderful DVD which features Mr. Dave Courtney, called Thugs, Mugs and Dogs, which is about greyhound racing in Rotherham.
Yes!
The last DVD you sent me is still in the car.
Remember, is it just because you haven't been to the tip yet?
Yeah.
I picked it up on the way out the flat.
I hope you enjoyed
and
that.
I left it in the car and I've never taken it out.
What was that one then? What was the last one you got?
Oh, I can't remember. It's still in the car. That's how good it was.
I can't remember what I sent you last. Was it probably Mob Handed, wasn't it?
No, because I've watched Mob Handed. It must be something else.
I can't remember, mate.
Yeah, either way, it must be garbage. Only a couple of brief items on the news this week, as the Oscars are the main news. But we did have sad news of Bill Paxton of Apollo 13 and Twister, as the radio kept saying. I'm sure he's probably more proud of Apollo 13 than he is of Twister. But passed away in the last week.
Yeah, 61, I think he was. Died of complications from surgery. That's a terrible shame, isn't it?
That sucks, like, a lot.
That's awful. And normally I shy away from these obituary column pieces that we sometimes get on the podcast because we just go, oh, yeah, this old person has died from cancer. Isn't that a shame? Whereas this is like, this feels like a genuine, you know, a real shame and unexpected, and a guy who we've probably all seen at least one or two films of that we've loved, right?
Yeah.
Aliens was the first one that sprung to mind for me.
Yeah, I think I've told the story on the podcast before how Aliens was the first proper horror film I watched. And I fucking loved Hudson in that movie. Loved him.
Mm.
You know, he was fucking brilliant. He's just, not just in Aliens, but in everything. He's just so utterly quotable in everything he does.
Do you know what? You've hit the nail on the head there, because bear in mind I'm old and I actually first saw him, and I remember it vividly, back in 1985 when Weird Science came out.
And he loved him in Weird Science.
Chet with the cigar-chewing older brother who was this vicious bully. And I remember the line, because his little brother's feeling really queasy after the party, and he says, "How do you like a nice greasy pork sandwich served up in a dirty ashtray?" Mate, I can't remember what I had for dinner last week, but I can remember that from 1985.
Amazing. The one thing that surprised me was when I was watching Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and I know lots of people say it's gotten better, but he disappeared from the show at the same time I thought, okay, it's not worth watching anymore. Because he was in it only for a little bit, Bill Paxton. I never really got on with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but when he was in it, he was great. He was by far and away the best thing in that programme. So it was shortly after his character's arc finished, I was like, yeah, I'm not bothered with this anymore. And it's over. Yeah. So he just seemed to make anything watchable.
He was the reason I'm interested in the Training Day TV show as much as I'm pretty sure it's going to be wank. He's in it, and I really want to see it because he's in it.
It's finished as well, isn't it? Haven't they done the first bunch of episodes?
I think the first season's done. He's only credited for 6 of 10, so I don't know how that works, because I know he's the bad guy character, you know, the Denzel Washington character in it. So I'm still curious, and I'll still give it a watch, but it's a shame knowing no matter what, he won't be coming back.
Yeah, it is. It's a real shame. And look, the way that he's gone as well is quite scary. I mean, it's a fear anyone can have, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Getting old and dying when you're 101, that's a good innings. But 61 on the sort of operation table, it's that's pretty grim way to go.
It's weird as well, because I've got, I don't mean you and me spoke about this the other day, because there's a new Alien film coming out, so I'm doing all the Alien movies at some point, which always leads into Predator movies, and there's that in a pile next to my TV waiting for me to start them, and he's in both of those franchises.
Yep, there was a tweet that went round, wasn't there?
Yep.
He was the only actor to be killed by a Terminator, a Predator, and an Alien.
Which is a very cool stat to have.
Exactly.
Yeah, and that's a real shame.
In other news, we can laugh at Callum.
I think that is slightly happier news.
Yeah, news more close to home. Callum made a bet with himself that that basically La La Land was going to win the Oscars. He writes his box office reports. So he used to do for us. He does it on his own website, callumpetch.com, though. And he writes them the night before that he publishes it. And it was Sunday night when he started writing this. And he said, of course La La Land is going to win. If it doesn't win, I will watch all of the terrible films that failed critics have had to watch. So now we are going to encourage anyone listening to this, tweet at Callum Petch with the most awful film you can think of. And you know, we're going to hold him to this promise. But he's going to have to watch them.
Does he not mean that by the awful films that we've had to watch, the ones that we've already given ourselves to watch in the quiz? Surely that's what he means. So
does. He listed them. He put Mob Handed, Kill Keith,
Essex, Space Bin.
Yep.
United Passions.
Well, there's another one. United Passions.
He's watching United Passions.
He doesn't
though,
like football either, does he?
Yeah, no. Yeah. I think he has watched United Passions, yeah.
Yeah. So we've had Mob Handed. Obviously, Killer Bitch was the one that seemed to be missing his list. You can't watch Mob Handed and not watch Killer Bitch, I think.
Give the poor guy a stroke making him watch that.
Knowing was definitely on that list.
Knowing?
Knowing was on there.
Yeah. Yep,
I can't remember the others now, but there's been some bilge.
Yep. Upper tier Steve on Twitter said, run for your wife.
Yeah, that was definitely one of that.
Yeah, yeah. Paul, you said, what did you say, Invasion Earth?
I watched it last week. Oh, my God. I've got a tip-off from the guys who run an excellent blog called Brit Picks, where they watch everything. They've got a double review of Mob Handed on there, for God's sake. I mean, they know their stuff inside out, and all the directors, everything that's upcoming. And they recommended to me this film as being one of the worst, called Invasion Earth, which is, it's like a chap who kind of reminds you of Alan Bennett. Right. Sort of looking after some drug-addled teens who all look fit and completely healthy, set against a backdrop of a bloke in a rubber suit with some lasers. It's nice. Utterly bizarre and utterly terrible.
Well, we've also had from your mate, Brooker, your mate John Miller, who said Birdemic.
I don't even know what Birdemic is. Sounds like something he found on the Sci-Fi Channel.
Was it a Nollywood film?
What's a Nollywood film? Oh, okay.
Nigerian Hollywood film.
Wow, that sounds terrible and ever so vaguely racist.
No, I don't think it's racist. I've seen it probably, YouTube, it's fucking terrible.
Yeah, yeah. It's meant to be one of the most awful films ever made, so keep them coming is what I say.
Yeah.
Keep sending them in.
And any we don't use, I'm sure we can use for quiz losers.
Yeah.
I cannot wait for his reaction to half of these. On to what we've been watching, obviously, where we're going to take a look at some of the films we've seen in the last week. There's a mixed bag here of new releases and non-new releases. I'm going to kick us off with Fences, which is one that I moaned about not being able to see last week because of this weird staggered distribution that the distributors were doing, not the actual cinema chain. But it's out, so I managed to see it. And it's quite hard to describe, really. It's Denzel Washington playing a guy,
Washington.
just playing a guy. It is a good film, made better by the fact that Denzel Washington is really good in that lead role. Many other actors in it would just make it a poor film. Not a lot happens, admittedly. It is just Washington doing a series of monologues, essentially, which he is really good at and really engaging in. I think there's a, I think I get away with saying this, really, there's a twist in the plot towards the end that just kind of makes no sense.
It doesn't make no sense. It just kind of comes out of nowhere, doesn't it?
Yeah, and it's just a bit stupid. And it just seems that it's put in there to give the to take the film in a different direction and to make it able to end in some way. Because otherwise you could just have him monologuing on for the next week.
Yeah, it's kind of there to almost force an emotional response at the end.
Yeah. I mean, the supporting cast are good, but they're not really in it that much. Well, they are. They're there, but they're just listening to him talk. It was odd seeing him in this, in the character, because because usually you think of Denzel Washington as a well-chiseled, good-looking man. And in this, he looked very... He was playing a middle-aged guy with a bit of middle-aged spread, a bit of a paunch. He looked older. It didn't... It wasn't the Denzel Washington used to seeing. Not that it took out the film or anything. I just thought it was quite interesting that he's usually playing like some quite good-looking, handsome man. And in this, he clearly wasn't.
He looked tired, didn't he?
Yeah.
He just looked like talking. He looked like making the film had absolutely broken him.
But no, I liked it. It was a good film. It was worth watching. But I can't help but feel it. There was many other people in that role. It would have been a much worse film, and it would have been quite boring, and you wouldn't have been engaged in it at all.
I'd agree with that.
Was it worth the wait, though?
Well, I had to wait a week, really. So, yeah, it was just I just thought it was a daft way of releasing a film, sort of half the country one week, the rest the next. But, but yeah, it's a good film. You can see why he was nominated for a Best Actor Oscar for it, but you can also see why he didn't win it.
Well, do you think that was partly because of the competition? I mean, Casey Affleck was the odds and favourite, wasn't he?
Yeah, partly because of the competition and partly because it wasn't quite... Probably the film as a whole wasn't quite there to carry him to it.
It's very stagey, isn't it? It's not filmy.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can tell it was a play when you watch it. You can tell because it's like set in this 20 square foot area that is the dude's garden and that's it.
But I mean, when he's talking, when he's on one of his speeches or his monologue, it is good. It is, you know, it is interesting. You do want to listen to it. You're not kind of wishing him at any point to go, shut up. But yeah, it's just this kind of the plot turns towards the end, and you just think, well, you've just kind of engineered that to give it a get out to end it, to find an ending, because with him just talking about the different things that are happening and his experiences, there's no natural end to it.
I am kind of curious as to if the play ends like that as well, or if it had to be put in there, or if it's put in there so jarringly.
Yeah,
because that was the thing about it. It wasn't that it was bad. It was just really.
It was kind of at the point that it started to drag on a bit.
Yeah.
That it just kind of, I mean, I think I was in the screen for 2.5 hours, so that includes trailers and ads, etc. So the film is probably what, 2 hours 15-ish, and it felt longer.
I think I'd agree with that as well.
It felt a lot longer.
Yeah.
But no, it's definitely worth seeing for Denzel Washington's performance alone, really. Brooker, what have you seen?
So I saw Patriots Day, which is the third film where Mark Wahlberg teams up with director Pete Berg after Lone Survivor and Deepwater Horizon, where he plays a copper in Boston who doesn't really do much, but he's there at the Boston Marathon bombings in 2013. And we then see kind of the investigation with the local police and the feds chasing down the marathon bombers through Boston. And the story is interesting because it's the first time that a terrorist attack in the United States has ended with a city being in complete lockdown and everybody essentially being curfewed and told to just stay the hell in, you know, indoors and let us kind of come around and we're going to search the place top to bottom. It's not a perfect film, but I think it's a very, very good film. It's an excellent film. In fact, I really enjoyed it and would gladly watch it again. I find Mark Wahlberg infinitely watchable for the most part, except in The Happening, which was awful. But I thought it was a good. It does have that feel about it that, you know, all Americans stick together, kind of, you know, cheer for the Stars and Stripes kind of film. It does definitely have that. Maybe more so than the previous two films they've worked together with, which is impressive considering one is a war movie. But it's very good. I think it's very well paced, and it's, you're not bored. It's quite long, but you're not bored through any of it. I know, Paul, you've seen this as well, haven't you?
Yep, I really enjoyed it too, and I really like Mark Wahlberg. You're right about the pacing, because I was thinking, oh god, this looks quite long. This could be pretty grim, but no, it rattles along, and I really enjoyed it.
It's almost worth mentioning, I think, that Mark Wahlberg, while he's listed, you know, he's got top billing, he's like part of a massive ensemble cast. He's not actually in it for a massive portion of the film.
Yeah, I don't think it impacts on it. I think
no, it doesn't. No, not in the slightest.
But the actual story as well. I mean, I don't know how much of it was dramatised, but I actually found it really gripping.
Oh yeah, for sure. I think there was a fair amount was dramatised a bit. I did like because they got a lot of stock footage of the actual events for some sections of the film.
Okay.
Which kind of made you go, oh yeah, okay.
Ooh, I mean, there was some stuff in that was when that, you know, there was like a child and stuff, and they make that policeman stand there next to the body, and it was
that things like that really fucked me up.
That's quite for a film like this, which you think would be really commercial. It was really, I found that really powerful. I thought it was really good. It was really good filmmaking.
I think, but then he managed to mix in Pete Berg to do something like that.
Yeah, but he's managed to mix, you know, pretty decent human drama and emotion in with batshit crazy action as well.
Well, yeah, we were talking about this before we recorded, weren't we? The one kind of major action scene that this film has is,
I thought that was insane. Completely off the hook.
Oh yeah.
And it felt real as well.
It done a really good job of, because you see a little bit of it in the trailer, don't you? But it done a really good job of kind of, you get a feel for both, or for all of the action from all sides.
Yeah.
But it still feels very tight and claustrophobic because of where it is. Absolutely. It does. It's actually quite, it was quite scary. And I'd have to say, you know, in a big screen environment as well, it's loud and quite, it's very impactful for what I didn't expect would be a particularly good scene.
Yeah. And it also, because obviously I knew about the Boston Marathon bombing, but we just got day one headlines and that was pretty much it. This kind of filled in. I didn't know about all the, you know, all the stuff that went on after it kind of left the news here in terms of like the manhunt. I don't remember any of that. So a lot of the stuff presented here for it, and I imagine it will be the same for a lot of people in the UK, is fairly new information.
Yeah.
Did you know the whole story?
I didn't know all of it. I think I probably knew a little bit more than you.
Okay.
Just because I it sounds morbid when I say I tend to follow that kind of stuff. I don't do it on purpose because I like to know about all the death and dismemberment. I don't know how it is, but it always somehow appears to be on my radar. I just happen to know about it. So I knew a little bit. I knew, like I said, I knew about the, like the lockdown and a bit of the manhunt.
I was going to say, you've also got like a little bit of police procedural in here as well, how they try and piece it all together, and I found that really good as well.
It is interesting how they've done that and managed to make it interesting. I should have used a different word the first time. But it's impressive how they do that and make it interesting, because it could be so very boring watching people piece together bits of old, you know, bits of street inside a warehouse. It should be boring, and it's not.
Should I tell you what put me off?
Go on.
Seeing Patriots Day. I look at the trailer for that and I think, yeah, American flags, sickly, sentimental American tribute to catastrophe. I'm not interested in sitting for 2 hours in a cinema seat to watch that.
No, I didn't come away with that feeling at all.
There is a little bit of that. And it's, you know, there. What I'm going to say.
Oh, yeah. There is a little bit of that, but it doesn't. I wouldn't say it takes away from the film at all.
Mm-hmm.
It does have. I have this thing at the moment with films called the didn't happen test, when I'm presented with stuff that clearly didn't happen. And that scene in the garage with the Chinese fella, I'm telling you right now, that is didn't happen moment of the year. Nothing will beat that.
Really? That beats kicking away a grenade in Hacksaw Ridge.
Ooh, that's actually... See, now you throw me. It's pretty... It's good. It's they're, you know, they're both up there.
But the question...
kicking a hand grenade.
Exactly.
Him in the garage.
But, I mean, but the kung fu kicking the hand grenade's got the same thing. It didn't bother me. It didn't pull me from the film.
Funny. My eyes did start to rise upwards.
And you do go, you literally, for a split second, you go, oh, for fuck's sake, really? And move on.
But that's you what know. I was talking about. That's pandering to that the people who want to see that stuff and wave the flags and stuff.
But I don't think it panders that badly to people. Not Patriots Day, anyway. Of course it panders. All films fucking do. But I don't think it does it to a point where it makes the film unwatchable.
No, it's certainly not a deal breaker, and I'd happily watch it again.
You know, this ain't, you know, 13 hours bad. You know, that I mean, that's some fucking flag waving for your ass. You know, 13 hours is a terrible film for things like that. Mm. Patriots Day, not so much. Really.
As long as there's no Spider-Man web slinging in front of an American flag at the end, then it can't be all bad.
I mean, I didn't stay for any after credit scene. There might have been. So I'm not going to guarantee it, but I don't think there was.
And
how about A Cure for Wellness?
Yes, A Cure for Wellness.
So A Cure for Wellness was not as good as Patriots Day. Bear with me because I can't remember the guy's fucking name that's in it. He's got a weird Dane DeHaan or whatever his name. So this guy is a Wall Street banker who is sent to a wellness spa in Switzerland to get one of the partners from his firm back to New York for a merger. And he turns up. He can't take the guy, so he leaves, gets sent back to his hotel, and he has a car accident, wakes up in the wellness center with a broken leg and needs to kind of find the guy and take him back to New York anyway, because he has to. And what kind of follows is a, I shit you not, 2.5 hour long psychological horror movie, which very quickly, no, not very quickly, that's unfair, it loses a lot of its punch at about the 1:45 mark. So you got this guy who's kind of investigating. It turns into kind of a mystery investigation thing as this guy tries to find out what's going on in this wellness center. He's trying to find the partner that he's gone to get. He's trying to figure out why this guy, who only vanished off for 2 weeks, is apparently, you know, he's telling everybody how ill he is and he has to stay here, you know, because he's been brainwashed somehow. And there's this whole sinister backstory with, you know, the local town and the village and the guy that owns the wellness center. It's, I mean, to talk too much about any of this literally spoils the entire thing. And when I say that, I mean, the very second you meet the main guy that isn't Dane DeHaan, it's Jason Isaacs, the guy that runs the wellness center. The second you meet him and the story is explained, and this is at about the 20-minute mark, you've put 2 and 2 together, and now you have to watch for 2 hours as someone comes to the number 4. It's far, far, far too long, considering all of its reveals are done about 40 minutes into the film. It's got some very cool, very disturbing imagery in it, and some bits that will make even the most hardened people turn away. But the shock value in it isn't worth hanging around for 2.5 hours. Like I say, it should have finished 45 minutes before it did. I would have liked a nice ambiguous ending where I could have, you know, I sent a mate off to see it yesterday because I said you might enjoy it. I would have liked to have spent hours today chatting about what the ending could be instead of having a very final, very definite end. That again, took far too long to get to. And I know I'm labouring on this point. This movie is far too fucking long. Far too long. I was in the cinema for 3 hours by the time I got to the end of the fucking trailers and ads in the film. My ass was not happy with that. I mean, the problem is it's a horror film and it is horrific. There's no jump scares, but you can't keep that atmosphere going. You can't keep that tension for 2.5 hours. You've shot your load in an hour and a half. You've got nothing else to show after that. And it's just at that point, once you realize you've shown everything you've got to show, now you're just doing shit for shock value. And this is where the film's 18 rating comes from. Because there is a completely unnecessary and very over-the-top attempted rape scene that is quite horrible. And, like, to the point, I was like, that's not necessary. And I'm not talking, oh, I don't like rape, so it's never necessary. I'm talking that does absolutely nothing for the story. It does nothing. There's no context.
Just gratuitous.
It is just gratuitous. It's awful. And you just watch it and go, I didn't need that at all. And then it gets weirder because somehow out of nowhere, and this is literally to stretch out the ending, there is a cult that came out completely out of nowhere. And now they're having weird KKK looking dances around a hall. It's such a good premise and it could have been really good. And it is really good for about an hour and a half. And after that, it loses its mind completely.
It looked a little bit like Tim Burton Light does Shutter Island when I saw it.
Pretty much. Well, I'll tell you what it is. It's Gore Verbinski does Shutter Island. Because it's a Gore Verbinski film. And it looks like a Gore Verbinski film. It looks like Gore Verbinski does Shutter Island. And it's such a wasted exercise. Like, the guy clearly didn't have anybody reining him in.
Yeah, that's a shame.
He needed somebody pulling him back and saying, no, calm your tits. You don't need this. Because, lads, it's 2.5 hours long. I came out and I've got to go home and get a bed now. I went to cinema straight from work. I'm going to get home and it's going to be bedtime. Fuck's sake.
Yeah, that's a shame.
It could have been so good. And if I could just remove the last 45 minutes, it would be really good. And I would say it's worth watching because the bit at the beginning is really well put together and it's so clean. And there's so much nightmare fuel in this first hour and 45, which is a really tight mystery film. Just walk out at about an hour and 45 and you're done.
Okay, Paul, what have you seen?
Well, I watched Bonded by Blood 2, which is the new film from our mate Jonathan Southcott, who's a friend of the podcast. I think this lands in May. The title might suggest that it's a sequel to Bonded by Blood.
Well, it would suggest that, yeah.
It would indeed, but I think this is a poor marketing ploy, really. The first Bonded by Blood film, have any of you seen it?
Nope.
It's actually really good. You've got Vincent Reagan, Michael Socha, Tamer Hassan, and the acid test for me for any of these films is Neil Maskell in it? If he is in it, it'll be really good. If he's not, they're not always so good. And Neil Maskell's in the first one, and he's fucking awesome in it.
I really like Neil Maskell.
I know. So when I look at casts for these type of films and I see Neil Maskell's name, I know it's going to be good.
Mm-hmm.
This one, it's a strange one because it you all know about the Rettenden Range Rover murders, yeah?
Yes.
Yes. So Tony Tucker, Craig Rolfe and Pat Tate get fucking ironed out with a shotgun doing a drug deal in a field in Essex. No?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, okay, no, cool.
This one has Terry Stone, who plays Tony Tucker in the first one, in it, but only in flashbacks. So it tries to anchor itself to the first movie that way. But the weird thing is, there's actually a really good story here. You've got these three guys, Dean, Damo and Ricky. Two of them are banged up together. One of them gets taken under the wing of the other one because he's getting bullied. They come out and they start getting involved in various drug deals, other activities. And there's actually a really well-written, brilliantly acted story. But the trouble is, you've got this muddied kind of waters where they keep trying to anchor it back to the first film for no reason. You also have Danny Dyer's daughter, Danny Dyer, turn up. There's a love interest in it. And again, there's no payoff. There's no reason for that. I wish these films would kind of have the confidence to stand on their own and be about mm-hmm. what they're about with their own title. I'll give you another example, is that white collar hooligan film. That's actually about credit card fraud. It's not about hooliganism. Yet the cover and the title would make you believe otherwise. And it's actually really a good film about credit card fraud, but that sounds boring. And this, again, I think their lack of confidence in being able to have this story play out on its own two feet is such a shame, because it is really, really good.
I think it's didn't Sothcott tell us before, basically, that it's not really to do with having faith in the story. It's just they know what's going to fly off the shelves in Asda.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not necessarily tricking people into buying it, but their market is very specific.
Yeah.
And if the thing isn't going to appeal to them, nobody's going to see the film.
Well, Terry Stone, who plays Tony Tucker in this, I mean, anyone who's seen Bonded by Blood 1 knows he got his head fucking blown off in the first one. So even though he's front and centre on the DVD cover for this one, I'm pretty sure even though people are going to work out, hang on.
Yeah.
I mean, the people in it, Josh Myers, who you probably don't know who he is, but he's in a lot of hooli porn. He's really good. George Russo as Alvin is the best thing in it. He is fucking horrible. Really good. And Sam Strike, who I think he was in EastEnders. Really, really good. And of course, Burnside pops up. Everyone loves Burnside. Back to doing what he should be doing is playing the old Bill. So, yeah, I mean, there's so many Essex films, and there's a load more due. You've got Rise of the Foot Soldier 3, Essex Heist, and something I'm told that's called Barbie Doll Gangsters of Upminster.
You can keep that.
Yeah. But yeah, would I recommend it? Yeah, absolutely. Just you've got to disengage from the other film and just watch it as a standalone. Unfortunately, I think that would bring the run. If they took the other stuff out, the runtime would be down to about 50 minutes. Yep, that's it. I'm done.
Right, Owen. I watched a film which Steve recommended. Yeah, you recommended this one, Steve.
That's not a good start.
I watched a film called Backtrack, also known as Nazi Vengeance, the film you recommended at the end of last week's podcast. Oh,
on the basis of the title.
On the basis of the title.
Which Steve must have seen as well now, obviously.
Obviously. So we're going to have a very in-depth discussion about the intricacies of the plot. Is that right?
Yeah, you tell me what you thought and I'll agree with you.
God.
So, I don't really know how to describe this one properly. It's essentially a story about a fella who experiences these flashbacks from a previous life. Don't say in a previous life. He was a Nazi soldier, and he went to the village of Plumpton in the southeast of England, and yeah, well, to reveal more would be to spoil what happens, but, you know, oh, fuck it, don't. You're never going to watch this film. It's got 2.5 out of 10 on IMDb. It's absolutely fucking dreadful. And, okay, so the synopsis on IMDb, when four friends go camping on the South Downs, they are quite literally tortured by their past, right? That's effectively it. It is a torture porn film. It's Wolf Creek without any of the things that made Wolf Creek watchable or enjoyable or good or characterful or interesting or engaging or things that make
so
you squeak.
So it's a painting of Australia.
The villain in it, right? Villain isn't who you'd think it is. It's not a ghost of a Nazi. It's not the guy who's having flashbacks of being a Nazi in a previous life. It's the most ridiculous, stupid twist. I just cringed so much at the idea that it was a guy in the Second World War who was a fighter pilot, a British fighter pilot. And I don't even know what the connection is, but the Nazi kills his family in Plumpton. And then for some reason, his plane is destroyed and he burns almost to death but survives. And now he's this like 95-year-old man who's getting revenge on the guy who's now reincarnated from the Nazi. It's nonsensical. It doesn't make any sense whatsoever. And he only knows that this guy is a Nazi in a former life because he prayed to the devil.
What?
But that comes out of nowhere. It's like there is literally no, there's nothing here. There's no like folk horror elements to it. There's no idea of any cult. There's no ritualistic bits to it. It just goes, how did you, they go, how did you know about who we were? And he says, well, didn't you know? I prayed to the devil. It's just.
Does he say it with that accent?
He literally says it like that. Yeah, all the way through.
God. Now that's what makes it unwatchable.
But the guy who does it, Paul might know him, Julian Glover.
Yes.
Does that ring any bells?
Yeah, I know who he is.
Yeah, he's in. What's that Southcott film he's in?
Oh, I can't remember.
We Still Kill the Old Way.
Yes.
He's in We Still Kill the Old Way. But he's been in things like Game of Thrones and Indiana Jones and stuff
he's
like that.
Loads of stuff.
Absolutely loads of stuff. But he is dreadful in this. It doesn't help that he has an awful script to work with either. Basically, he talks like Tom Hardy as Bane through the whole film. He's got the most dreadful dialogue to work with. The repetition in the dialogue as well. Bear in mind, they've got like this shittiest film to work with. It's the most ridiculous plot, and there's so much repetition of phrases that it's not intentional. He says, you talk too much so many times. Why? You're not trying to create a catchphrase for this guy. And they literally set up a sequel at the end of the film as if that's ever going to happen. That's not going to materialise. Just, oh my God. I fucking hated it, basically. There's one guy in it who's okay. One fella who is called Miles Jovian. Won't mean anything to anybody because none of these actors have been in anything else except Nazi Vengeance, according to IMDb.
Nazi Vengeance 2.
Funnily enough, it's not listed on IMDb yet. There's no plans for Nazi Vengeance 2, as far as I can make out. But he's okay, but he's essentially playing this dickhead character, really. He's playing the boyfriend of a girl who is the one who can access the Akashic records, which effectively means she can look into people's past lives for them with some kind of spiritual psychology mumbo-jumbo kind of bullshit, really. And her boyfriend is having an affair with another girl. So those two are obviously the ones then. You just know from the fucking minute they're on screen and they're caught having an affair together, they're going to be the ones who get caught and tortured because that's the most obvious device, right? These people now who you've got a reason to think are dickheads, they're the ones that you're going to feel less sorry for if they have their chests burnt and their hammers hit into their shins and stuff like that, right? But for some reason, when they're caught having sex in a tent, right, the nudity in it is not what you would expect. Because you would think, okay, well, they've got this blonde girl who's obviously kind of there because she's supposed to be quite good looking and and all that. There's no nudity from her at all, except maybe a glimpse of a bum cheek. With him, it's
all
full
you need
on...
sometimes.
Yeah, but his like swollen member is flopping about all over the place in the middle of the screen. Why? What is this supposed to add? You literally, are you trying to show me his dick because he's proud of his dick? Is this a Steve Norman thing going on? He's just trying to send dick pics around.
Dick pics.
The ultimate dick pic is to just have his massive knob flying around the screen. By massive, I mean zoomed in, obviously. But it just, it doesn't contribute anything, doesn't mean anything. It's, again, to use the word gratuitous, because that's what it is. Yeah, it's just... It doesn't express vulnerability. It's just a guy who... Well, I mean, fair fucks to him because he maintains his hard-on for ages. But, I mean, really, just unnecessary. And that's basically how I felt about the whole film. It's just unnecessary. So,
You've sold it to me.
Oh, man, it is awful. It is really bad. It is possibly the worst horror film that I've seen this year.
Beautiful. I've just been on to the Amazon.co.uk, ordered Thugs, Mugs and Dogs, and sent it to Steve.
Excellent.
Perfect.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway.
We've come to what you've all been waiting for, and that's us telling you what won the Oscars because you've not seen it yet, and commenting on such awards being nominated, given out, whatever. We're going to start off with Best Picture, which eventually went to Moonlight. But it was almost La La Land because of a monumental fuck up, which is all it could be described as.
I talked Brooker out of live tweeting the Oscars. I said, what's the best thing that's going to happen? Some film you didn't expect to win wins.
Do you know the best thing that happened?
Yeah.
Well, Suicide Squad is now an Academy Award winning film.
Yep.
Brooker?
Yes, mate.
Do you know what it beat?
I know what it beat. I don't care. Right.
Star it's Trek
a,
Beyond.
It's an
it?
Academy no, it's Award called, winning film.
A man called Ove, right?
I know.
Just put this out there, where they made up, they put prosthetics on a 61-year-old actor
who
was supposed to be playing a 59-year-old guy, and they made him look 80 with the worst prosthetics I've ever seen committed to screen. So they
Here's
did
the thing.
Really well.
I do not give a flying fuck. Suicide Squad is now an Academy Award-winning movie. You can asterisk it all you like. It has an Oscar. Suicide Squad has an Oscar. And fuck anybody that wants to dig on it.
Run upstairs and arm wrestle the missus, right? And then you could say that you were the best arm wrestler in your house.
Actually, so?
I'm reevaluating that. I'm thinking that there might be a bit more stiff competition than I was the first thinking. She doesn't listen to this, does she?
She does every week.
Oh, fuck.
It's staying in there.
Anyway, so yes, yeah. Best Picture went to Moonlight, but the man who stuffed the envelope probably had kittens when it was being announced.
I don't think it was envelope stuffing, it was just the wrong envelope.
Well, yeah. Whatever happened, I mean, I didn't realise until this was being discussed on the news earlier that it's an accountancy firm who does all the counting and therefore the envelope stuffing and distribution of envelopes in the correct order.
It was PwC, yeah, isn't it?
They have identical cases with the same envelopes each side of the stage. So depending on which side you come in, you get handed the right envelope. Because they came in on a different side, they accidentally were handed the previous awards envelope.
Yeah, so they read Emma Stone, La La Land. They must have thought Emma Stone did not produce La La Land.
Well, he did see one. He's like looking and his face goes and then
he hands it over.
He must have known. He must have known this wasn't the right thing and just handed it over. Didn't
he threw her under the fucking bus, didn't he?
Definitely.
Stitched her up like a fucking kipper.
Oh, hats off to the fella. I thought that was genius.
Yes, but anyway, let's talk about Moonlight winning the Oscar for Best Picture. Perhaps somewhat surprising. I think a lot of people did think it would go to La La Land.
Well, we all thought We all thought it would be La La Land.
Yep. However, I will say, last week I did mention about Betfair being a much more fluid market, and in this one in particular, where all the bookies had La La Land as like 33-1 on, that price was shifting and shrinking massively on Betfair, and that Moonlight did have a chance.
Well, none of us thought or wanted it to win, and the only person who predicted it, of all of us, of all the people who voted, you know, put in their predictions to win a bundle of DVDs, probably dreading those DVDs now after the things that we've just talked about arriving in Steve's letterbox. Andy Alcock was the only person who predicted Moonlight.
Oh, that's nice. Slice. He wins this fucking thing every year.
He wins every year, doesn't he? But he hasn't won this year, actually. A guy called Sean Hughes has won. So congratulations, Sean Hughes. You guessed 9 of the 11 categories. No relation, by the way.
Congratulations, Sean.
Yeah, congratulations, Sean. We will be in touch soon about obtaining your address to send you some
Hold on.
DVDs.
You can't fucking tell me to keep my gob shut and not say anything offensive. And then say, oh, that's it. With no.
I've got some lovely Rolf Harris albums as well I'm going to send him.
Yeah.
Can we just mention, while we're here, and before we move on to the other ones, some of the reactions on both the media and on Twitter and by various journalists and stuff to the Oscars. And I'm really fucking fed up with what should be a lighthearted competition about films being turned into this massive politicized load of bollocks. Do you know the website Jezebel, which is a feminist website for fat, ugly women who can't get fucked?
Paul, come on, man.
Who are running two stories on their front page, one about a fucking creep wins an Oscar and another one about Samuel L. Jackson is forced to give La La Land, a musical Oscar, to three white guys who made jazz music. Are you kidding me? They're basically accusing Casey Affleck of being a sex pest and that Samuel L. Jackson has been forced to give an Oscar to white people.
Sadly, I do know Jezebel, and that's the kind of cunty thing that site runs all the time.
Other stuff about the white helmets all being terrorists, members of Al-Qaeda. And then, of course, Toby Young going on today about no white heterosexual men can ever win an Oscar because clearly for the last 80-odd years, all the black lesbians have been scooping them up. Bloke's a fucking cunt, honestly. Anyway, carry on.
Owen didn't want much swearing in that in this podcast.
You can cut that out. I'm just really getting hacked off with it. It's a fucking film competition.
Yeah. There is part of me, though, now. I mean, I really liked Meryl Streep's speech at the Golden Globes. And I think that kind of thing, where she was talking about how role models now essentially have a very important role to play politically in terms of working with journalists and spreading awareness about things. I mean, because of who has been elected president, who is just a proven liar, you know, who says anything to anybody to boost his own ego, essentially. So I kind of think that it's not quite the same as previous years where we argued last year, didn't we, about fucking Leonardo DiCaprio, and he basically brought in his issue of the year, which was global warming, because he was in The Revenant, which he saw as being about the destruction of nature. So then it became a speech about that, which was like, well, no, you just have a soapbox for a cause that you just think is further in your career. Whereas the politics stuff is much more real. But that might just be me. I might just be a fat, ugly lesbian who needs to be shagged as well, but I don't know.
That's probably the case.
It's possible.
Come on.
Almost certainly.
The main headline on your website is fucking creep wins Oscar. Seriously.
There are two long-standing allegations against him, though. it's not them saying, oh, he's a bit creepy, isn't he? Because he lecherd at someone on stage or something.
It's,
they were
allegedly grabbed a girl, yeah, a woman's ass. Allegedly.
Well, I think it was a little bit more than that from what I read.
Have you been reading Jezebel, Owen?
I'm fully subscribed.
For movie news.
I have a Google alert.
Fucking website, so don't give a shit about films all year. Suddenly pipe up when it's the Oscars.
Hmm. But again, it's the role of celebrity, isn't it? It's a big thing, and so that's obviously where they're latching on with their news, as everyone in the fucking country does, because it sells, essentially.
Okay. The winner of Best Actress was Emma Stone for La La Land. I mean, out of that lot, again, I haven't seen enough of these films for people nominated for Best Actress to really comment. But do we think out of those she deserved it? I mean, what did we all go for?
So we all thought Emma Stone would win.
Yeah.
So congratulations to us.
Yeah.
Round of applause. We all thought she would. None of us wanted her to, however. Nobody picked her as their want. Brooker, Steve, and I chose Natalie Portman, who's who we wanted to win out of that category. Paul chose Isabel Huppert for Elle. But, so, I mean, it was obvious, wasn't it, really? She was like another one that was just dead on to win, wasn't she?
Yeah, she was. And the other reason I didn't want her to win, I was watching her in the film, and all I could think of was, have some fucking dinner, love.
She was looking
very thin. I'm thinking famine relief. You're knocking at her door. Mate, she'd be on the poster. It was like back in the Mary Whitehouse experience when Suzanne Charlton used to do the weather and they used to shout at the telly, have some dinner, eat something.
Mm.
And she'd be nipping to the food bank on the way home.
Yeah, she did not look well.
Do you know John Shuttleworth?
No.
The comedy musical guy?
No.
He had a song which was about Keira Knightley couldn't get much thinner. Keira Knightley, eat your dinner.
There you go.
Oh, for God's sake.
Unless she's got celebrity illness.
See, you don't know if she's got a tapeworm or not.
We had the most un-PC episode ever.
Oh, we're not even talking about film,
we're not even
we?
Close.
Body
yet.
Shaming and slating all these.
I'm sitting here wearing my Jim will fix it t-shirt.
Yeah, I've got those Ron Harris LPs ready to go.
Should we do Best Actor now? Which went to Casey Affleck for Manchester by the Sea.
Hooray!
Woo! Well deserved.
Yeah. I don't know. I still would have preferred Gosling. Yeah, I just thought he was much better.
But what did we all go for? This is the important bit. What do we all think?
You were the only one who didn't think he would win, Steve. Everyone else did.
Yeah, sounds about right, doesn't it?
You thought Gosling would win, but actually you wanted Andrew Garfield to.
Wow. I mean, I was probably doing that thing where I just throw a different vote in there so I can try and beat everyone, because if everyone votes the same, that ain't going to happen.
Yeah. You were voting first, though, before us, so...
Doesn't matter, does it?
I mean, just let him have it, man. Otherwise he just feels like a loser.
Oh, if only I cared.
care enough to make up a crappy excuse for it.
Best supporting actress was Viola Davis for Fences, which I was quite surprised by after seeing Fences, because she didn't do much.
Did you not think she was spectacular? I thought she was the best thing of that film.
No, I thought she was good, but I just didn't think she was. I don't know. It's just sort of. I know it's supporting actress is the award, but it's just like she was very supporting, because it was all Denzel.
She cries so well.
Yeah.
See, I haven't seen Fences, but again, crying is just something that's almost guaranteed, isn't it? To
here
just
he goes.
Give you an extra few points towards it's your
trouble
Oscar
and strife and tears and she had that locked up.
If it's crying over family, then it's just
almost
a certainty.
Did we all pick that?
Again, we all thought, except Steve, who thought Naomi Harris was going to win. and wanted Octavia Spencer. I wanted Michelle Williams to win. And Paul, you wanted Nicole Kidman.
Yes.
Because she reminded you of Madge from Neighbours.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Which, you know, we all agree still is a legitimate reason.
Absolutely. Do you remember Madge from Neighbours?
No.
Yes.
No.
Do you remember Bouncer?
The dog.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then how can you not Madge and Harold, Bouncer, Kylie, Jason, come on.
I know Harold. I never used to watch Neighbours.
Did your parents not have a telly?
Country living.
We played charades in the evening and read books by candlelight. I mean, what did you do when you were young?
Well, it was only black and white, but we did have a television. I was always suspicious of people when I was younger who didn't have a telly.
Yeah.
I'm suspicious of people now that don't have a telly.
Mm.
Yeah. I've got a mate who, up until the age of 9, I think, didn't have a telly. I just feel so sorry for him. It's because he missed out on so much culture.
Yeah. I get that friend thing where you go, well, what do you point your furniture at?
Yeah.
That's genius. The thing about people who don't have a telly, the first thing you'll learn about them is they don't have a telly. They can't wait to fucking tell you. It's like being a vegan. They can't wait to tell you they're a vegan, whatever it might be.
There's a great Russell Cain routine about how, you know, you can tell someone's working class because their TV is bigger than their bookcase. I thought that was a quite funny observation. But yeah, you had to be there, I guess.
But, well, no, it's funny. I'm just looking at my bookcase compared to my TV, and yeah, I think he's right.
Yeah.
Well, my admittedly, bookcase is fucking massive, all of them.
My bookcase is filled with, you know, kids' books that I will never read. But I've read more of those than I have my own books.
Wow. Do we do Best Supporting Actor, which was Mahershala Ali for Moonlight.
Yeah.
Pronounced that right, didn't I?
You did.
Done all right there.
Can you do it again?
Yeah, what are you going to do?
Not performing monkey, bro. No. Yeah.
Just trivializes it if I do that.
Again, we all thought he would win, except Steve.
Like Steve.
Do you know how the Oscars work, Steve? You have to pick the best.
I'm putting a protest vote in it that I vote for.
Yeah. But I mean, like the past three categories as well, of supporting actress and best actor, of all of them, we've all predicted, except Steve, correctly. Booker, for each of them, you've also wanted that person to win their award.
Yeah. I'm absolutely happy with those winners. I think they all done really, really well.
Yeah, I mean, I've totted up like of who we wanted and who we thought would win. You're going to be the most happy because you, by far and away, had the most that you wanted to win.
Cool.
Compared to the rest of us. So,
I'm okay with that.
Mm. Steve had Jeff Bridges as his pick. Paul, you had Lucas Hedges for Manchester by the Sea.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted Michael Shannon. For Nocturnal Animals, just because I like Michael Shannon.
Yeah. Best director went to Damien Chazelle for La La Land.
We must have all got this right.
I think we all did, and we must have done.
Nah, probably not.
didn't Steve go for a rival?
Well, La La Land, best director, Brooker, Paul, and me. And Steve went for someone else. So
you went for...
Yeah.
Dennis Villeneuve, didn't you?
I don't care what I did.
Yeah, that's what he thought. And wanted Mel Gibson for Hacksaw Ridge. And actually, two also wanted...
I wanted Mel Gibson as well.
Yeah.
I thought that would just been hilarious to see him get that.
It would have been fucking great. Instead, the only thing he'd done was get interviewed on the red carpet about his possible directing Suicide Squad 2. What shitty runner-up prize that is.
Yeah. Damien Chazelle, though.
He would have had a chance of winning an Oscar if he was with the original Suicide Squad. So
true. Oscar winning.
That's true.
Yeah, so...
But eventual winner Damien Chazelle is now, at the age of 32, he's the youngest director to ever win an Oscar.
Not being funny. I could get a couple of A-listers, get them to sing a few songs badly, bosh, Oscar.
But you're not 32.
There was a... Mullinger actually tweeted it, which was the opening sequence to La La Land, right, where they're all dancing and they're on the road, all the cars apart. Yeah, there was a thing that they did a rehearsal shoot of that, and it's Damien Chazelle filming the entire rehearsal on his phone, all in one take. And actually, I mean, that gives me a bit more, a newfound respect for what he was doing. I didn't quite realise that it was all one take. And I think in that, it just works quite well. It just looks amazing. But otherwise, yeah, I mean, it again, was just nailed on winner. It was obviously going to be Damien Chazelle, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Steve?
Yeah, definitely. Mm. Best original screenplay went to Kenneth Lonergan for Manchester by the Sea.
And we all thought that would win. You included, Steve.
Yeah.
And we all wanted, except you, Steve. You wanted The Lobster.
Yeah, but it's meant, wasn't it?
Still have to
but
see
that. Yeah, Manchester by the Sea beat La La Land again in that category.
Best adapted screenplay was Barry Jenkins and Terrell Alvin McCraney for Moonlight.
Booker, Paul, and I correctly guessed that one, and Steve went for Arrival.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm a sucker for anything with aliens in it.
Did Arrival win any Oscars?
They got one, didn't it?
It
was something,
one.
I don't know. Yeah.
Do you know what the amount of awards the Suicide Squad?
It did.
Do you know what the thing that ruined it for Arrival was, I think? Has anyone seen that mock poster? You know the Rick and Morty episode with the big head?
Show me what you got.
Yeah, with that instead of the alien ship.
Yeah.
And it just being on the poster, show me what you got. I think that just ruined it for Arrival. Best animated feature went to Zootopia. I didn't think it was Zootopia. I think most of us thought Kubo and the Two Strings.
Well, you thought Kubo and the Two Strings. Nobody else did.
And in many ways, I was right.
In all but the most important. The
animation is, of course, for babies.
Mm.
But Zootopia did win. It was, again, me, Paul and Brooker who chose that one. But it was your Underground Nights most, was it disappointing film of the year? Or?
Yeah, it is his most disappointing film of the year. I think mine was The Accountant.
Yeah.
Something just didn't add up about that one, did it?
No.
But come on.
Oh, God. It's like podcasting with my dad.
that'd be a weird kind of inception, wouldn't it?
Steve, if you were my dad, I'd be well happy.
The sequel to Primer.
Oh, what time is it? It's getting quite late, isn't it? All the bad jokes are coming out now.
So did we all pick Zootopia then, apart from Steve?
Yeah, I think so.
We all picked it as thought, yeah. But wanted... Brooker, you wanted Kubo to win. Paul, you said you didn't really care, but I think you chose My Life as a Courgette.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I chose My Life as a Courgette because
it had the word courgette in it.
Yep. Well, it had the word zucchini in the title, according to the Oscars.
Yeah. But there was you were never going to beat Zootropolis. It's, you know, a cute fluffy bunny beats all racism.
Exactly.
You weren't beating that.
Yeah, but Steve went for both Think and Want as Kubo.
Yeah.
What's next?
Best documentary feature, which went to O.J. Made in America.
It did. Paul picked that, and I picked that. Brooker, you went for 13th.
I thought that was a lock, just because of what it was.
You thought I wanted that. I wanted it too, and I think Steve wanted 13th as well because it was bottom of the list. And Fire at Sea, which is what he thought would win, was top of the list.
For fuck's sake.
To be fair, OJ is actually on iPlayer now, isn't it? So I'm going to.
It is. It went up today, didn't it?
Well, that's quite long.
7 hours.
Man, we've all been there. I've done the staircase. I can do that easy.
Fuck that. I ain't got time for that shit.
I mean, you watch how many episodes of X-Files?
Mm-hmm.
I haven't watched an episode of X-Files for ages. And actually, my bigger concern is, that's classed as one film on my list of 365, and it will take me 3 days.
Yeah. Paul, you wanted Fire at Sea to win this category.
Yeah.
So we only have one category to go then.
Which is?
Foreign language.
Yeah, which went to The Salesman from Iran.
Nice.
And Steve?
I didn't go for that, did I?
I think you did.
You were the only one who went for it. Yep.
I have seen all the foreign languages.
Don't forget your own, Steve.
Just all of them, not just the ones that were nominated this year, just all of them. Just ever. Everything. Yeah. Anything that's in a bit of foreign.
I mean, really, if we'd have thought about it more, we probably could have predicted that as well, because Asghar Farhadi, I think is how you pronounce the name.
Yep.
She boycotted the Oscars. She's Iranian, and she wasn't going to go to America, basically. Not that she'd probably have been allowed in, given the current situation.
Not with that wall being built.
And the ban.
That doesn't help.
And just her general attitude. Yeah. Just no.
Just geography there, Steve. Mexico not bordering with the United States.
They'll never get the plane over that wall.
Depends how you want to try and get in, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But anyway.
It's an easy jet flight. Yeah. It just drops her in Mexico City.
It's probably Ryanair. You get fined for trying to do anything on that, don't you?
Yeah. So The Salesman won.
Yeah. Just for a bit of balance, Paul thought it was crap.
Anyone I haven't seen.
I've managed to see it. It's been tough to get a copy of.
Yeah, we were all over the shop with this one. We were picking every film except Land of Mine. That was the only one we didn't choose for either think or want. Everything else was just a scattergun approach to this category. Mm. But, do you want me to reveal then what's happened?
Go on then.
Because we're at the end, thankfully, I'm sure the listeners are thinking. For what we thought would win, Steve correctly guessed three of them.
Yeah.
Brooker correctly guessed eight of them.
Nice.
Paul correctly guessed nine of them.
Yep.
And so did I.
Ooh.
We are joint winners, Paul.
Hooray. Well, we can both send each other a DVD.
How's that? Yes. That seems like the more I'm saying it out loud.
Does sound like Omen's getting the rough end of that stick.
I thought, oh, how nice, we could send each other a DVD. Oh, fuck. That was my train of thought. But what we wanted to win, Brooker will be the most happy because five of the films that you wanted to win, Brooker, won. They picked up an award.
Awesome.
For Steve, of all the films he wanted to win, none of them picked up anything. So you're going to be the most disappointed with this, Steve, with this year's Oscars.
If I cared, yeah.
Paul, you and I, we both, again, we're drawing together because it's one apiece. We both wanted
Manchester by the Sea.
One, yeah. That's all of the predictions that we've got.
Who won the prize?
Who done the best was Sean Hughes, who guessed nine. So, Andy Alcock, who was the reigning double champion,
yeah,
I think,
sliced.
He won twice in a row. He got six correct this year. I think this is the first year where he's actually watched most of the nominations as well. Normally he picks blindly.
Yeah, without seeing any of them.
So the year he actually could formulate an opinion based on what he's seen is the year he loses. Well, not quite as bad as Steve, but he only got six correct. So Sean Hughes is the winner. Amy Saxby as well got six, by the way, joining with Andy. Maya voted as well this year.
Actually, she hasn't seen any of them.
That would be quite telling because she guessed the same number as Steve.
Wow.
She got three.
Good girl.
So, yeah. So, congratulations,
Sean.
She'll
beat Brooker in an arm wrestle, though.
Oh, yeah, of course she can. That's never been argued. Like, not ever.
But, yeah, Sean is... runaway listener, and I will be a runaway winner, I should say, of our listeners who entered. And
running away when he gets the DVDs through the post.
How many boxes with Hooligan on the front are you sending, Paul?
Last week, I kid you not, I ordered every single DVD with the word Hooligan in the title.
Dude, you've got far too much time on
your
hands.
You did not.
I did, because I thought it'd be funny. Now they keep coming through my letterbox, I can't make them stop.
I wish you had a postman that just stole your DVDs. You know, like one that just nicked stuff.
Yeah.
And he just gets them all the time. He thinks this guy orders a fuckload of stuff from Amazon. And every time he opens it, it's like Essex Boys 3.
No, but this is the thing. He probably is a postman that steals stuff. He stole two and gave them back.
The four arrived today. I can't even bring myself to look what they are.
Fuck's sake.
Why? It just sounded like I thought that would be quite fun. Yeah, no, not really.
Really should do like a book out of it, you know.
Oh god.
Should we do some recommendations?
Yes.
I'm gonna go with on Netflix Jason Statham Crime Caper in the Bank Job.
On Netflix?
Yes. Just the one. Just the one. It's the only film on there this week, yeah. Brooker.
On Netflix on the 1st of March. It's not on yet, so on the 1st, which is what, the Wednesday? I think. Groundhog Day is going on to Netflix.
Again?
Yeah.
Paul?
I watched 10 hours yesterday of a show on Walter Presents, which is on All Four, called The Swingers. Now, have you seen this advertised everywhere? I think they actually put it on Channel 4 as well.
I've seen it advertised, yeah.
I've heard of it, yeah.
Yeah. Let me just put it out there. In Holland, where it originated, it was on a Saturday night, not that late in the evening, and it was called The Neighbours. Slightly misleading for Channel 4 to call it Swingers, because in 10 hours worth, there's only one bit of swinging and no tits. However,
why are you recommending this?
I was just thinking, what's going on there?
I thought, you bastards, Channel 4, you've conned me into this. Actually, it's a really good slow burn, murdery crime thing where you, at the start of each week, you see a little flash of what's happening now, and then you'll see like 22 weeks ago. Then the next week, you'll see a little bit more of what's happening now, 18 weeks ago. Very clever, very intricate, really easy to follow, and it's a little bit slow. It's a little bit saucy, but only a little bit. But I really enjoyed it. The twist at the end, maybe you'll see it coming, maybe you won't, but I really, really enjoyed it, and I'm really looking forward to season two.
Excellent.
It's free.
Good. Owen?
On Saturday evening or Sunday morning, whichever way you want to look at it, 2:15 a.m. Sunday morning, Saturday evening, on BBC Two, is one of my favourite folk horrors, you know, talking about that fucking awful Nazi vengeance thing earlier. The Witchfinder General is on. On BBC Two, the Vincent Price film where he plays Matthew Hopkins, the notorious witchfinder in the 17th century. Not Anthony Hopkins, as I once called him on the podcast. Yeah, went around burning women who he accused of being witches.
From Jezebel.com.
So, I'm from Jezebel.com, yeah. That's what happened. It's based on that. It's a biopic of... yeah, but no, it's a fantastic film. It's one of my favourites ever. Horror film, any kind of film. I love it.
The Failed Critics podcast is presented by Steve Norman and Owen Hughes, created by James Diamond, with original music provided by Kevin McLeod of Incompetech.com, remixed by James Yule of JamesYule.com. You can find us at failedcritics.com, on Twitter at failedcritics, and Facebook at facebook.com/failedcritics. Thanks for listening.
Poor Owen and his job at the BBC disappearing in front of his eyes.
Smoke.
Owen, Channel 5 is no... there's no stigma attached to working at Channel 5 anymore. Their output is...
I'm going to have to be fucking reviving Bravo at this point.
Mate, any channel that can have Rebecca Luce wanking off a pig is good enough for you.
I remember when they had good old-fashioned, you know, shitty porn on at 11 at night. Now it's just pig wanking. It's almost as good. So I'm just reminiscing here. And looking at the time, realizing it's just about time for something decent on Channel 5.
What? They're going to rerun Rebecca Luce wanking off a pig?
I know. I'll let you know.
Did you ever watch that?
No.
I can't say I did.
Go to the YouTube. But I think the only clip there
to the YouTube.
On the YouTube and type in Rebecca Luce wanking off a pig, and you'll see the clip. It's fucking hilarious. And that was back in the day, entertainment on Channel 5.
I would suggest that you log out of your YouTube account, or do it in an incognito window, or your browsing history will
private
forever.
Browsing.
Yeah.
there are certain people that want to have a look at my internet history in the next couple of months. I can't hide that. hold on, I can't spell wanking. Hold on.
You don't remember Keith Chegwin with his bollocks out?
I remember that.
There we go. Wank fuck.
David Beckham wanking Rebecca Luce. That's not what I'm looking for.
No, no.
Although I'm saving.
Anyway, should we knock it on the head there?
Semen collection from boar. Panda pig and bucket. What the fuck is all of this?
You must be spelling a surname wrong.
LOOS.
Yeah.
It's I found it. Rebecca Luce, and I'm guessing this is it.
From a Spanish TV.
Yeah, it looks Spanish or Italian or something. I don't know how loud this is, but I'm going to watch. You can wrap up the podcast if you like. I'm just going to watch.
It's done. It's gone. I'm cutting.
Ah, yes.
Oh, she looks so happy.
I like that. You can wrap up the podcast as, like, we've gone on this 5-6 minute ramble about Rebecca Luce wanking off a fucking livestock.
It's amazing. It looks like jizz coming out of an old lipstick.
Quite curly, if I remember.
Well, so far, all I can see is the tip, and it's very triangly. It's like a mini cone head.
That's funny enough. That's what Maya said.
Oh,
that's right. What I told her to say.
Yeah, but you can only see the tip. Yeah. It's quite cone shaped.
That's all she needs.
It's like an old lipstick.
Yeah. It's smearing everywhere.
Oh my god.
Oh, it looks like rice pudding. What the fuck?
It's entertainment. Listening to Brooke of watching Rebecca Luce wanking off pig.
It's really grim.
We should stop any pretense anymore of having a film podcast. Just get rid of the boring film
anyway,
shit. No one cares about
anyway, I'm going to go. I'm done.
This is why me and Paul are only allowed on like 2 podcasts a year together.
Right, I'm off, lads. I'll see you later.
Bye.
Bye. Good night, Steve.
Oh, we've killed Steve. Who knew that pig wanking would kill Steve? Oh, God.
That was the step too far for him. As soon as we talked about wanking off animals. This is beyond the pale, lads. I'm off.
What you could have done was seen how many pig wanks it takes to fill a bath.
I don't know, dude. I'm watching this.
You could have expanded that to various other livestock to see which could have filled it the quickest.
There is a quiz in there somewhere.
Oh, God. What was I watching the other night where somebody suddenly announced, do you know why the band 10cc are called 10cc? Because that's the amount you jizz.
What?
10cc?
The band
10 cubic centimetres. Oh, I see.
Yes. It must have been a film because I don't really watch TV, so.
Hmm. Mm. There we go.
I wish I'd known that when we did the jizzing in a bath thing.
Yeah. Would have saved us a bit of Googling.
Would have done, yeah. Did you know? Right, can we fuck off now?
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.